Welcome everyone to the Sparkcast. Finally, we're here. Who's we? I'm David Ellis, and I'm joined by
Frank O'Connor.
Frank, want to introduce yourself and what you do around here?
So I am Frank O'Connor. I'm the Franchise Development Director at 343 Industries, which means lots of little things. I work on the franchise, the story, the extended franchise, things like the novels, comic books, action figures, all that kind of stuff. And today, actually, we're here to talk about novels specifically.
Yeah, and some of you might know me, some of you might not. I'm a content producer here. I work with the Waypoint team here at 343 Industries, which means I do some machinimating, some of the videos and content you might have seen on Waypoint. Used to be at 1UP.com where I did some writing and some video stuff there and podcasts. So, but as Frank said, we're here to talk about the books and specifically Halo Krypton.
Yes. So we did announced a couple of years ago, actually, that we were going to be working on a series of forerunner novels, and the author was going to be Mr. Greg Bear. He of Hugo Award and Nebula Award winning fame, and he has recently completed the final editorial draft of his book. So we thought now was as good a time as any to play an interview that we recorded with Greg actually a couple of months ago at Comic-Con in San Diego. We sat down. At that point, he was about three quarters of the way through the book. He was getting close to a final draft, and there was a lot of to and fro. It was a great point to record the interview because it was right in the middle of the process, as it were. But now we're through that process, and a lot of things have changed since we recorded that interview in terms of the content of the novel. But I had the pleasure last week of reading the finished thing, other than a few periods here and M dashes there.
And I still haven't read it. I think I mentioned it in the podcast or when we did the interview, which we actually recorded in a conference room at Comic-Con San Diego. Obviously, I knew when I came on board here that we wanted to do some stuff, podcast stuff, because it's kind of something I've enjoyed doing at 1UP in the past. So this is the kind of the first out of the gate, but we'll be doing some more of these. We'll basically do them when we have something that's worth talking about, because we don't want to waste your time, and we obviously, we value that. And so whenever we put one out, and we'll try to put them out as regularly as possible, we'll make sure we have some good content there for you.
Yeah, the cadence and timing of our podcast is another thing we're going to borrow heavily from Bungie.
Especially with this first one. So this is the interview with Greg Bear. It runs for about 26 minutes. When we get back, we'll thank actually a few people and kind of talk a little bit more about what we want to do. All right, so we're here. We're actually recording this. And by the time you've heard this, we're recording this at Comic-Con. I'm, of course, David Ellis, and I'm here with Frank O'Connor, who is... What is your title these days?
Franchise Development Director for Halo at 343 Industries.
I'm so jealous of that title.
It's really long. It just kept piling words on, and nobody stopped me. I was going to do more, like a huge kerplunk puzzle of words.
And, of course, the reason we're here is we're talking with Greg Bear, who is authoring the Forerunner trilogy for Halo. And, of course, if you know anything about books and sci-fi and anything, you know Greg Bear. He's written about 50 books. How many?
30 novels, something around 30 novels.
And I believe 2 Hugos and 5 Nebulas. I did a little research.
Steven Award and Spanish Awards and all sorts of cool
and
stuff.
It's a podcast, and it's not visual medium, obviously, but... Greg is wearing a lot of award bling as we speak. He's got Hugo ships. Awards are just huge gold. And Nebulas are a big clock, like Flava Flav, and he's got like 5 of those.
But you know, the ring in the nose has got 3 rockets on each side. So it's starting to weigh on me at the end of Comic-Con here.
And he's had it engraved with Halo filigree and terrain. So.
No, I'm not going to tell you where the Halos are located. So.
Well, that's why we're here to talk about the Forerunner trilogy. I mean, it's when it was first announced, which I believe was last year at Comic-Con. A lot of people were curious because, I mean, there's been a lot of, in the games, a lot have been talked about the Forerunner, and a lot of it's been hinted at in the books. And this is the first time that the readers, gamers, whoever is going to be, reading these books, experiencing these places and worlds, be the first time they actually get the entire story of who or what the Forerunners are.
Well, almost the entire story. There's going to be a lot of stuff left over for the game people to develop and everything. We're going to have some big reveals here.
I wonder what was the process, Frank, from your perspective, on how you chose Greg Baer, or how Greg Baer came in to write a Halo book, and how did that all go down?
It was embarrassing because we were talking with Eric Robb, who's our editor over at Tor, about the potential for a Forerunner trilogy, because we're talking about, you know, Halo's it does have some hard sci-fi themes, but it's effectively kind of an action franchise with sci-fi elements, and you know, the human weapons kind of dictate the pace of that, how hard the sci-fi gets. So we mix it up with slip space and stuff, but fundamentally we wanted to explore the mystery and the hard sci-fi of the Forerunner universe, or our purported imagining of it. And Eric said, well, what kind of writers are you looking at? And I just reeled off a list, and I said, literally first, well, Greg Baer, yeah, Ian Banks, and just, you know, the Alistair Reynolds, the sort of current hard sci-fi giants. And he said, well, you know, I know Greg, so maybe I could ask him. And then he asked Greg, and Greg was interested. And it really didn't get an awful lot more complicated, and it took a little while to come to an agreement and a schedule and stuff like that. But our first choice was, you know, the gods were kind that day. So,
did you know you were going to be working on the? Was Greg Baer always going to be writing the Forerunner trilogy? Was that how the conversation started?
I don't think we'd have thought of Greg Baer as a natural fit for the what we call the contemporary Halo stuff, which is the 26th century Master Chief stuff and Spartans, just because that's the domain of Eric Nyland and now Karen Travis, of course. And
they do it very well. Yeah, so I don't want
to intrude. Yeah, we were looking for this conversation started, and Greg's name came up because of the Forerunner subject matter, and we're lucky enough to have literally the person that we thought was ideal for it. And we were presenting his name as a model for that type of prose, honestly. And he said, well, you know, I know him. I've got a number.
When you were, you know, coming into the project, and how familiar were you with Halo as a gaming franchise and book franchise, and how much research did Frank? I'm sure he dropped loads and loads of notebooks and all kinds of information on here.
Cool bling off the whole thing. We got an Xbox and all sorts of things. I'd been watching my son play Halo for years, and we knew Eric Nyland, and you know, had watched this whole thing go on, and I was familiar with the basic premises of Halo. My son is deeply familiar with Halo stuff. So I brought Eric Baer in right away and said, this guy is going to be my advisor, and Frank okayed that. And we've both been contributing, you know, pretty interesting ideas. And the partnership has been fascinating to me because it really is a collaboration. And I've been aware of that from the beginning, but it's also a collaboration with really sharp people. They don't just know about Halo. They know about how to put good ideas together and how to run with them dramatically and gameplay-wise. And what I came in here to do was not just to write a good novel, but to learn perhaps how to structure gameplay and do that, so, you know, steal their secrets from them. So far, they've been helpful, but not necessarily utterly revealing on how to actually do this stuff. But I'm starting to see how it happens.
What I find interesting about this specific trilogy is that it's really setting the foundation for everything that we've actually experienced up until now, and that has to be a pretty daunting task to try to figure out how everything ties together. I know Frank, you and Kevin Grace, our managing editor, are deeply involved with that. How is the back and forth communication? As of course you get pages in, you send things back. Like, how does that process go?
So, Greg has a very very strict regimen of how he works. So we get his stuff when it's good and ready to be given to us. But we have at many conversations, both here
last year and a half or so,
and we've been to Greg's house, and he comes to visit us often, and we it's strange because we have these very roundabout conversations about very specific items, and some of them I can't exactly talk about, but when we talk about the didact, you know, we'll say, well, what does the didact look like, what kind of character is he, what is his bearing, you know, we talk about that level of stuff. And then honestly, and Greg can speak to this, We set up these sort of basic tent poles, but Greg is absolutely responsible for the plotting and the development of that stuff. We don't say we want the didact to go do this and we want the librarian to have done this. All of that invention and all of that storytelling is coming straight from Greg, and we're sort of sitting back and admiring that process. But we're definitely, I think we tend to give advice about specifics that we know about.
The stuff you need to have.
Yeah,
they tell me what they need to have or what they wish, a sort of wish list of what they want, and I can work with that and have a lot of fun with it. And we weren't sure what the Forerunners looked like at the beginning of the process. Now we have, I don't think it's too much of a reveal to say, we've got all kinds of information about what the Forerunners look like, and it's been a constant back and forth as to their social structure, their development, all that sort of stuff. And we're getting into, you know, the area where it's actually visually very entertaining to watch.
I'm curious how the creative process is for you as a writer working on in original universes that you've created versus ones that are already established. For example, of course, Halo. I know you also wrote a Star Wars book called Rogue Planet. What is that process like, and how does it differ from your normal creative process, or is it different?
You know, I'm a Southern California boy, which means I was raised on TV and movies and next to Los Angeles, you know, hung out with special effects artists and all that sort of stuff in my misspent youth. And so doing stuff in a franchise universe is like working for Hollywood. You are in their universe. You must be respectful toward it. You must understand what their dramatic structure is, what their mythic structure is. And so as a Star Trek fan, I do use the term Trekkie because I think it has great cachet. I was a Trekkie in the 60s. And so writing the Star Trek novel was fairly easy. The characters just spoke in my head. But it was already laid out. The Star Wars book's much the same way. I knew that for my book to fit in between movie number one and movie number two, I had to unfold my tent, tell my story, fold my tent up, and get out of the way of George Lucas. And that was fun, too. You know, but they allowed me to do some pretty interesting things along the way, which I was a bit surprised at. For Halo, this is quite different. The games are familiar to everybody. This history is not. It's a lot like writing an almost completely original book based upon some sort of interesting suggestions, details which we have to follow, some numbers and dates we have to follow, and then the rest of it is I can be as wild as I want to be up to a point. And that's just like writing a big, complicated science fiction book, which is what I've done all my life.
What's fascinating to me, and we talked about this very briefly before we actually started recording, and I wanted to hit on it again, is you and Frank were talking earlier about how the book's coming and how the process is going. And you had an interesting turn of phrase. You said you're not sure where we're going to end up. And I think that's so fascinating to me as when you're writing. It's an organic experience. It just kind of – the words take you on this journey, even you as you're writing. And I think that's fascinating. Can you talk a little bit about that? And well, are there times where the journey goes places that you think – maybe we shouldn't have gone there. Let's change that.
Absolutely. And then I sent a quick note off to these guys and scared the hell out of them. But even we can't, some of our jokes that we have, we can't even talk about because they do point toward, you know, what we're discussing in detail here. And unfortunately, I think we should compile a lot of the false emails that I would love to send out. You know, it's only going to be a one volume book. Sorry, it's turning out really happy. So that sort of stuff. I've been fascinated by, in fact, how much not only these guys know about Halo, but just about gameplay and storytelling. And I don't have any problem working with them at all. It's been a delight.
You know, you're talking about Greg's process in terms of working in an existing universe versus working in a new universe that he's creating. It's kind of a combination of both. And bluntly speaking, you know, a lot of the mysteries of the Forerunners, as Greg knows now, these are things that we had thought about and we had kind of sort of taken care of some of the big mythos. But the details, no, and the plotting, certainly not. So in some ways, Greg is behaving kind of like an archaeologist, where he's finding these strange structures that are there. There's no instruction manual left to describe a pyramid, for example, to a 17th century explorer. So Greg, in some ways, is sort of brushing away sand and figuring out what these hieroglyphs mean. And he gets input from us, but I'll say this again and again and again. He's creating this, and he's creating it backwards from the moment the Halo is fired in a way. That's not the chronology of the book, per se, but that's kind of how the process has worked in terms of how he has to interpret these strange monoliths and obelisks that we've left scattered around.
And going into a project that's a trilogy before you even started, I mean, that's something that I would think is a fairly recent invention in the grand scheme of books over the years. How is that process? I mean, do you have a grand sketch of where you think all three, obviously Frank just mentioned that we kind of know where things end up towards the end of the last one?
We do have the history.
I think
yes.
You do. Least,
yeah. But how we got there is the interesting story.
Do you sketch out a lot of key things that should happen in volume one versus volume two versus volume three? Or is it more you finish volume one and then you see how that journey continues in volume two, taking you towards...
It's a little more organic. I want to leave room for the real creators here to discover where they want to go. And then I can fit what I'm doing into that, and it's back and forth. And that is a really intriguing process, which requires that I don't plan ahead too far. The danger there is I can work myself into many different corners. you know. But I find out that in the Halo universe, I keep getting saved by the stuff that's actually been discussed. And I think, oh, no, I can't solve. Oh, wait a minute, this actually happens. There's a good point to start writing toward. Then we have this point over here to start writing toward. And these are going to be set pieces involving structural details and vehicle details and character details, which have never been explored. And for me to have, you know, the chance to actually design Forerunner starships and dreadnoughts and all that sort of stuff and work within the context here is great, because I'm a big hardware fan.
So, I mean, obviously we can talk about the fact that the book has a release date.
Of course, I get to read this stuff now, so it's very exciting for me too. And Greg actually has an interesting submission process whereby he'll submit something, we'll say, that's great, keep going. And then he'll resubmit it, but he'll resubmit the whole thing, and Greg will go back and very, very diligently edit his own stuff. And so I was going, the last drop I got had basically doubled the amount of stuff, and I'd already read the first half, I thought. And I was going to just skip, and then I read the first couple of pages, and there were so many really significant and beautiful edits that he'd made already that it just made the whole thing a fresh joy to read again. And going into it, I not only felt like I was understanding it better this time, I was understanding it better because there was better stuff in there. And it's I don't see that in a lot of writers, and that's not a criticism of those guys. That's just a more praise of Greg's process and attention.
It's our collaborative process. I feed him the pages. I get reaction back. I know where to focus. I know more about these particular details because that's going to be happening throughout this trilogy. I keep getting feedback, and then I see exactly what I should have been saying. Fortunately, it doesn't require an awful lot of revision. It just takes the right revision.
And I will point out another
change the words, that
another
sort of thing.
The cruelty of Greg's is that when he's giving us drops of editorial, he put in cliffhangers for us as the editors, not the reader, but like the editors for me and Eric Robb and Kevin Grace. And it's like he'll end a chapter on some note where it's like dun dun dun, and of course we don't know any better than the reader does about where that dangling participle is headed. So
always keep your editors guessing.
It seems to work.
Well, kind of speaking of teasing and the story, I mean, obviously by the time this comes out, people won't have been able to read the book yet. But are there some hints and teases and things we can talk about as far as where this first novel, this first volume is actually going to take people? Like, where are they going to be, and kind of what are some of the kind of places and people we might meet?
Planet names, and you can try and guess what we're talking about. Shall we do that?
You have to be careful though, because Greg used a semantic trick on me and completely fooled me for like, it took me about a minute to realize what you'd done. I can't even explain what it was, but he described a world and in such a way that I just had no idea what it was, and then later slapped my head. That was very
That's
tricksy.
Right. We don't want to spoil the fun of discovering where we are. But there's some very familiar opening places. And we're describing literally human origins and perhaps some reasons why it is so confused. I think Halo people have always been asking themselves, hey, how does this tie in? Well, I ask myself that too. You know, why is our fossil record so confused? We're going to find out why. We're also going to be tying it into folklore, to language, to all this stuff. Because the human element in this story is very significant. We have, in a sense, three major story arcs. And so far, I've only kind of worked out the first two. We got the Didact, an amazing character who's going to go through an amazing transformation, has already. The political system of the Forerunners, the social structure of the Forerunners, how AIs are used by the Forerunners, what kind of clothing the Forerunners wear. You know, we can get into that in more detail, but actually I'm having great fun dealing with the fact that in one of the games, one of the AIs sees a Spartan and mistakes him for a Forerunner. How cool is that?
There's a lot of the just kind of symmetrical elements from the modern Halo universe, as it were, with the – you see that confusion in the Halo game. You know, 343 Guilty Spark is a little bit confused about who is visiting his ring. And we see that Forerunner structures can be activated by humans. And Greg has taken diligent steps to make sure that all that mythos is not only explained but pays off in really exciting and literally unexpected ways. Like almost every single thing that he solved for, he did a 180 and completely tricked us in terms of the direction that we thought it was going naturally.
So I should point out, I haven't read any of these pages, so I don't actually know exactly what's going on. Frank keeps those locked away day and night. But the way you're describing there, the human origin, and Halo 3 hit on this, and also the lead up, the Iris Arc hit on it, is the fact that the Arc is there on Earth, and the fact that there had been interactions between humans and foreigners. The way you talked about it, it almost seems like the Halo games and the books that followed and worked with it, it's almost like as if the human race is kind of rediscovering is the wrong word, but becoming reacquainted with the Forerunners and what they've done. Would you say that's accurate?
You will understand after the first two pages of that is very accurate. There's very little doubt is going to be left in the reader's mind that humans and Forerunners are quite familiar with each other.
You said Greg likes to leave cliffhangers for the editors. God knows he'll probably leave it for us poor readers. I mean, how quickly will the volumes 2 and 3 hit after?
The next one's going to be January and the one after February.
Well, it's episodic novels. I like it.
That these are tougher books to write than we had hoped, and so it takes probably 7 to 8 months to actually do them right and get them revised properly and everything. And I would like to have a little more time, but definitely next year. Then we take a break. So I fully intend to have a huge cliffhanger in Volume 2. And then this gives us all time to take a deep breath and figure out where we want to go and collaborate some more and then just really seal it off with some amazing reviews.
Just so you understand, when we have Greg over for meetings, we usually have him in a boardroom, either upstairs or downstairs, and there is a huge poster of George R. R. Martin, and we throw pies at it. And we don't say anything to Greg. We just grab a pie, and we hurl the pie at him, and then we point
to
the clock.
5 years later, you're going to find out what happens in the Throne of Kings, yes.
Yeah, I just started reading that series myself, not knowing all the stuff that came after, and now I regret being, 3,000 pages into his series so far.
I will say that George is writing at much greater length than I am in these books. I'm going back to the classic structure of the Foundation trilogy and so on, where the books are not humongous, but they are very, very pointed and sharp.
Roughly how many pages are we expecting? More than 300, less than 400?
Yeah. They're fairly hefty reads for certainly when compared to some of the more traditional Halo fictions, they're a little bigger. But yeah, they're very readable. I mean, I think people say hard sci-fi, and that sounds like a very sterile term, and it makes you sound like you're going to be talking about Schrodinger's cat the whole time. And it's not like that. Hard sci-fi really speaks to, it's funny that it's called hard sci-fi because it does tend to, in fact, gloss over science just as much as any other kind of sci-fi, but it deals
travel
with,
is a big issue.
But it deals with them head on and in interesting ways. And I think that's really the only distinction between, I would say, sci-fi and hard sci-fi is a sense of scale in my estimation. I don't know where the actual Rubicon is drawn by editors, but to me, it's just scale and it's just the types of subject that you deal with. But the way it's written is just beautifully readable. I mean, Greg's, as we can hear from his jangling blingery, is carrying at least 7 major sci-fi awards.
Well, we think of the precursors of our particular era, Arthur C. Clarke's and so on, are poets. They always have been poets. And they have a style and a structure which takes you to a place you've never been outside of all human experience and lets you feel it, see it, almost taste it, and then experience for yourself the emotional impact of it. There's different styles of characterization in these books, where sometimes the world is more of a character than the people witnessing the world. In my stories, they're all equal. And in fact, you find the characters are reacting to what they're seeing in ways that might, be a little unexpected, because they come alive, for me at least. And I find them being a little reluctant to play the game properly. And it's great fun then to torque them around and put them into situations where they have wry comments. That sort of thing is always part of the character I write in science fiction.
Books are actually a hugely visual medium. At least they are for me. Because when I read, everything is in my mind. I'm seeing it in my mind's eye as I'm reading it. And so I'm curious. Frank was showing you something. We can't go into details on it before we went on. And it was something it's in the books. And you made a comment that that's almost exactly what I was thinking about when I wrote it. And I'm curious, have there been such...
Say right what that was. One of our artists, actually our art lead, Kenneth Scott, who worked on Id's Rage before he joined 343, was helping us with this project and has started visualizing the didact. And he hadn't actually seen Greg's description of it yet and had started kind of toying with this, basically trying to make a really terrifying presence, like an intelligent, scary-looking thing We'd just seen a rough sketch, and we still haven't gone and talked to Kenneth about it. So this is the first he'll hear about it too. But it was just this beautiful thing, and it's been and it's something that Greg wanted from this process as well. As we have all these great resources and assets, and Kenneth is more than happy to help us with obviously the covers for the other novels, but this visualization of the Didact, and it's eerily close to how I'd felt about the character, if not specifically envisioned. I don't know how Greg felt about that image particularly, and it's dumb to talk about an image that we're not going to show you. But
no, I think the image is dead on for me. And the interesting thing is, because we're in a collaborative mode, you don't know quite who's thought of what or when it happened. But if it resonates, then creativity, the origins of it don't matter. It's the team that put it together. And I love to do that with really good creative people, and having these artists come on board and start resonating with the story ideas and the character designs we've kind of been discussing for years, for a year at least, is just great fun. And I think that's that zeitgeist, this whole team zeitgeist, which indicates that this is a pretty damn good team.
And maybe by the time this comes out, we can actually put that image out there so people can actually see what we're talking about.
It probably won't be that image, because now we get to iterate on it. But
it'll be prettier and better.
Yeah. Probably. And I think that, to Greg's point, some of it's team effort. But you should remember that if you're reading the book and something is particularly resonant and you think that's incredibly insightful or brilliant, that was me. That was one of my
May very well have been after I whispered in his ear. So, yeah, no, the thing about working in any media, when you're working with a group outside of working alone in a room, you know, taking meetings and that sort of stuff, the respect of the group is either there or it isn't. And it can happen even in professional situations where projects get finished and released that the group didn't really like being together. I like being with this group. I'm enjoying myself.
Well, hopefully the people who are listening to this enjoy themselves. I think this is a good place to stop for this particular chat, but hopefully we can have you back on. Perhaps at that point we'll have our studio set up when you come next time you come to visit, or maybe we can call you at some point and get an update and see where things are. So thank you so much for joining us, Greg. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Say, like, I was so nervous going into that interview because I had never met Mr. Bear before, and obviously I was a big fan. I'm a sci-fi geek. People know that about me. I had a lot of fun doing that, but what's changed since then? You talked a little bit about the fact that was about 3/4 of the way through the process and it's now done. Like,
yeah, a lot of things have changed. I mean, a lot of really significant fictional stuff has changed. We were working with Greg Daly to make sure that everything tied to the universe as it exists now. And that means some of that's really easy. It's like, well, what is a halo? It's a big round thing. Some of it was more complicated. We had elements of fiction in there that were canon, and some of them were a little bit confused in that regard, because, of course, we had things like conversations from the universe and the terminals from Halo 3 that were absolutely canonical, but in some ways they were unreliable. It even says that at the start, that there's some unreliable witnessing in here. So we had to have conversations about, well, what things were utterly reliable and what things were either mistranslated or miscommunicated through 100,000 years of change. And that gave us some problems, of course, but it gave us a lot of really cool opportunities. The really good thing about working with Greg is that he's open to lots of change and lots of suggestion, but it's the stuff that he brings with him rather than his adaptability that makes him an exciting person to work with. And, you know, there are a lot of shocks and surprises in that book. Anyone who's been through the first 10 pages will know that. And another big change since then is we changed the name of the book.
Yeah, because at that point it was Antediluvian, which
yeah.
of course means
it was codenamed Antediluvian, but yeah. That was Greg's original idea for the title of the book. And as you said, it means after the flood. And you know, we felt there was a couple of things we felt, which was one is that there was just a cooler sounding word in his own prose, which is the word cryptum, which, as you'll see, is going to have a lot of resonance in the universe. And secondly, we just felt that Antediluvian had a spoiler built in, right? It was like, it's after the flood. Wait a minute, but your book is set before, you know. So it was a tricky one, and it's, you know, it's one of the few big ticket items where we really pushed back on Greg, because luckily mostly we didn't have to push back on anything. I mean, mostly it was beautiful to begin with. We had a few detail things here, a few date things there, but I think the early conversations and the early meetings that we had with Greg set up for success, and we were really happy with the results.
We talked about it a little bit in the interview, and we hit on it. You of course, joked about we were going to do DLC for books when I asked about the cadence of releasing them. But at what point will Greg start, or has he already started working on
it? He's already started working on the follow-up. We already had some tune for directions that are going to happen. And I can't give away any spoilers in the book, but
please don't, because I still haven't read it.
Finishes on a big cliffhanger. And a fairly scary, epic cliffhanger, and a thing that, the cool thing about this book is I think it's going to appeal to hard sci-fi fans right off the bat of any stripe. It hasn't been dumbed down for, a video game audience. It's classic bear, space opera, grand science fiction, with a little sort of hint of adventure in it. But the beauty of it, I think, is the surprises that are in there for people who think they know the Forerunner universe or think they've guessed its shape. There are lots of surprises, and they keep coming, and they are going to keep coming for the next two books as well.
Well, I'm definitely looking forward to reading it. Before we sign off here for this first episode, I did want to thank off the bat you've noticed it at the beginning and interstitial throughout the podcast. We had a chiptune version of the original Halo Monk theme song from, of course, Halo CE that was actually done for us as part of the Halo Reach community meetup at PAX. And it was done by a couple of chiptune artists, and I want to thank them real quick. And that's Minus Baby and Crash Faster.
That's their real names, right?
Yeah. I believe it's. I saw their driver's license, and of course you can find them at their websites, minusbaby.com and crashfaster.com. That may be why they got those names, because those URLs were available. Anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed this first episode. Like I said at the beginning, we're gonna do them reasonably regularly, but only when we have stuff that we think is worth taking your time out to listen to. And I definitely think this first one, I listening to it 3 months after we recorded it, I actually had a lot of fun listening to it while I was editing it. And I hope everyone else does as well. We're going to be recording some more over the next month or two, have some cool stuff hopefully planned that if we can pull it together, I think people that have been playing Reach will and had their copies of Reach around might have some stuff that they'll enjoy hearing a little bit more about.
Yeah, I'd like to thank everyone for listening. I also thank, of course, Marty O'Donnell.
Yes.
Who may have had some hand in inspiring that piece of music that we opened with. If Marty, you can't write good chiptunes without good tunes.
Yeah, absolutely.
So shout out to Marty, of course.
Yeah, and obviously one of the things we want to, and we definitely are interested in hearing feedback from the community. If there's things that you guys want to hear about, if we can talk about it, we'll definitely do that. So if you guys have any ideas, feedback, concerns, anything, you can reach us fairly easily. I am always checking the Halo Waypoint Twitter account, which is Halo Waypoint, one word. Also on Facebook, at Halo Waypoint. And we'll set up a podcast email account pretty soon. It's not ready quite yet, but you'll be able to send emails directly to me, and I will reply to as many as I possibly can. So once again, thanks for listening, guys, and we'll definitely see you next time.